I'm Jeremy Loeb with WCQS News. You're about to hear an interview with Representative Mike Clampett. He's a new member of the General Assembly representing District 119 in the House. That district encompasses Haywood, Jackson, and Swain counties. Clampett is a Republican. He narrowly defeated incumbent Democrat Joe Samquin by around 300 votes in November. Mike Clampett, thank you so much for coming in. First time I've spoken to you in person. It's nice to have you. And congratulations on your win. It was a very tight race. And I know at least the third time that you've run for that seat.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
it is.
The third time. Okay. Well, what do you think was the issue that put you over the top this time? What did you think, just the stars aligned for you this time? Is that...
Well, first of all, let me say thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come over and speak today and be part of your program. And feel free to contact me anytime you have any question about any legislation we have going in Raleigh. As far as the win that I achieved this time, it's a God-given opportunity, if you want to say stars aligned or whatever. But I think the people's voice got to be heard, and people turned out to vote that hadn't voted in quite some time because, frankly, they've been discouraged with the process, felt like their voice wasn't heard, and just all the negativism with that. And I think at this time, in this juncture, in this election, people said, I'm going to stand up, I'm going to make a vote, and I want my vote to count. And their votes counted because I did win, and I appreciate that.
For our listeners who don't know who you are, could you tell me a little bit about your background?
Yes, sir. I grew up in Swain County in Bryson City, about 6 miles out of town, out in the country, so I'm a country boy. I graduated Swain County High School back in the 70s, and as all young people trying to find a job, I left the mountains and went east. And got a college education in Forsyth County and also down in Salisbury at Rowan Cabarrus Community College in fire science. And I careered in the fire service, 28 years in the city of Charlotte, and retired as fire captain. I dual careered at the same time as a director of fire and rescue at Central Piedmont Community College and have quite an extensive background in education and training with the Department of Justice, the State Fire and Rescue Commission, and the National Fire Academy.
What was it that got you into fire?
It was a public service thing. I've always had an interest of making my community better and making things for folks be easier when they're having difficult times. I started out as a volunteer firefighter there in Winston-Salem, and really enjoyed it. It was a great opportunity. It was productive, and it made you be part of a solution instead of being part of a problem.
What were you doing out in Winston-Salem while you were doing the fire department there?
I was going to college.
Oh, okay. Cool,
yes, sir.
Cool.
I graduated for SciTech as a machinist, so I have a background in actual factory work, et cetera, with that. And then I got involved with the volunteer department and transferred over in and made that my life's career. In fact, I've been in public service over half my life.
And why is that? Was it a family that sort of got you set on that track?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I never met my real dad until about 12, 14 years ago, and he was a firefighter. His brother was a fire marshal. He had another brother, one of my uncles, was a firefighter with the Air Force. So unbeknownst to me, across the board and time-wise, I guess I was geared and destined to do that. Not to say that's in your chromosomes, but public service just seemed to be part of my life, and I enjoyed putting out for other folks.
That's really interesting. So you didn't even know that he was a firefighter until 12 years ago?
Correct, yes, sir.
Wow. Well, what did you think when you found that out?
It was quite surreal.
Yeah.
I got to meet him. I was 50 years old at the time and had never met my real dad. He had left before I was born, and it was very interesting.
Okay, okay. So what was it like growing up for you in Bryson City?
Well, I lived 6 miles out of town and on a farm where we had cow and pigs and chickens and dogs and cats. And I lived with my grandmother and helped take care of her. And with that being said, I went to school and my mom remarried when I was about 12 and then I had a stepdad. And we moved back out to town, as we called it. So, but living on a farm gave me a lot of responsibility. Cow had to be milked twice a day.
Yeah, yeah. So was Winston-Salem and then Charlotte, was that sort of a culture shock for you when you went?
Well, moving to Winston helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Leaving the mountains and going down east, my aunt was a guidance counselor and a school teacher for the Scythe County school system for many years. So she had a background to assist me with that. And by living with her and her husband, had the opportunity to live the big city life, so to speak. And then when I got a job in Charlotte, it was just a move up.
Oh, I see. What got you going in terms of politics?
Well, I've always been even on the fire department, we were politically active with doing things there that with the legislature. I'd been to the legislature before, lobbying for different bills for firefighter safety, survival, and things of that nature. So when I retired and moved back to the mountains, I, having lived in Charlotte, saw how that the big cities seem to surpass and overcome what the smaller towns and communities actually need. So being in a depressed area with low wealth, et cetera, I made a decision to run for the state house seat and make my living conditions better for the other high school students and folks in Western North Carolina, Swain, Jackson, Haywood counties.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so having run before unsuccessfully, you were still serving as sergeant-at-arms. And what does a sergeant-at-arms do?
The sergeant-at-arms on the house side, we have 22. We have a chief sergeant-at-arms and then 21 assistants with that. And we set up all the committee meetings for all the legislators. We're a support staff. We also record all those meetings. It's unbelievable to some people the amount of work that goes on before there can be a committee meeting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of handouts and a lot of materials that have to be brought forth and laid out for all the legislators to review the bills that they're going to review in committee. Also maintain decorum on the House floor to make sure that when the speaker tells someone their time has come to an end, that they sit down. And I got to admit, I had an opportunity to approach a legislator one time and ask them to sit because the speaker was not recognizing them anymore.
You can still do that as a lawmaker now.
Well, I can stand and say that I will not yield until my time is up speaking on whatever part it is.
But it's very interesting to listen to the formalities that they go through.
Yes, sir.
And so it sounds like you're going to go in with a bit of an advantage over maybe other freshman lawmakers that you know what's going to happen.
Well, that's true. As sergeant-at-arms there and getting to hear the process and everything that happened in the order of stuff, Tom Tillis was Speaker of the House when I was there. He's now our state senator. And that was a mentor to me for being in the state house. In fact, it was Tom instrumental getting me to come down and go to work there.
Oh, I see.
And okay. So that being the case, I learned a lot from him about the policy, procedure, et cetera. We do have the rules of the House that have to be followed and have to be adopted every time we go into session for the biennium with that. And we have approved those rules temporarily at the moment, which they can be subject to change with an agreement in the body. But they're very important. And the rules give avenues for redress for issues on bills. And just you have to be intimate with them to know what you can do and what you can't do.
Right, right. And you also have the added benefit that you've been able to form some relationships with some of the people that you'll be working with already, I guess, I assume.
Yes, sir. I, being down there before in the 2 years, a lot of those people have returned back and are still in the state house as legislators. And it gives me a leg up on having had make those bonds in the past and those communications with them to where they know who I am. They know what I stand for. And I can depend and rely to speak to them and discuss about issues and some of the bills that I feel like that may be important. It will be coming forward.
Yeah. When you had a chance to observe the legislature before, what was your overall impression? I mean, I know I'm asking you to comment on something that you're going to be a part of now, but did you see where it worked and where it didn't work? And what are some of your thoughts about that?
Well, it's very interesting. The House floor, as the process goes, is a lot of pop and circumstance, if you will, as such. A lot of the decisions on the bills were already made in committee. All the determinations and all the writings and the proposed committee substitutes have been approved, et cetera. A lot of work is done before a bill ever hits the House floor. And once it does, the decisions of how that vote's going to go has probably already been made through caucus. And so it's a lot of the discussion and a lot of the talk, et cetera, is there for just letting people know that the representative is standing up for what their belief is in, you know, the proponing of the bill. If it's something that's good, they feel like that the person speaking for it, or if it's, they feel like it's bad, it's their representative speaking against it. So,
if a lot of those decisions are made prior to the bill being introduced on the floor, how do Democrats get a say in those pieces of legislation? If a lot of these things have been formed in caucus, how much reaching across the aisle does the legislature do?
Well, the committees mm-hmm. are made up of Republicans and Democrats. And as I've said in other interviews I've had before, all the legislators in Raleigh that are down there that have been elected are there for the greatness of North Carolina. They're all wanting to work together to be able to keep our state great, make our state greater, and work for the benefit of the people. And as far as that division, and when I say caucus, both sides do that. Mm-hmm. That both sides can make decisions beforehand, before bills make the floor. It's just not a one-sided kind of thing.
Yeah. So you'll also have the benefit of having, you know, grown up in Bryson City, also spent a lot of time in the cities, and a lot has been made over this urban-rural divide in the legislature that's kind of, you might say, paralyzing some things and creating division in other things. Is that something that you might be able to help sort of bridge the divide, do you think?
I believe so. Having grown up and returned back to a small town area like I have, and then having worked in the metropolitan area of Charlotte, I can see the contrast between the two. What happens is a lot gets lost in translation. A lot of times the folks of the inner city and large metropolitan areas do not get a chance to take in some of the headaches and some of the difficulties that the rural areas may have in some of the passing of the legislation. So hopefully I can bring to the table those kinds of important items and issues with that, and just get people to think a little bit outside the box sometimes.
Do you think that the recent special session concerning House Bill 2 was an example of that? I mean, obviously you weren't yet a lawmaker, but what was your take on that sort of breakdown in negotiations, if you will?
Well, no, I wasn't a lawmaker, and any opinion I'd have with that would be a formulated personal opinion at that time. Mm-hmm. Let me say, currently, as a lawmaker and as the legislator, I'm full support of HB 2 in its roots and its ramifications across the board. It's something that we need to make sure and clear that it's a safety issue. It's not just the bathroom bill, as some people call it.
Does that include the provisions beyond the bathroom portion that you're in support of as well?
Yes, like I said, HB, I'm in support of the two bill, uh-huh. And that with its ramifications, et cetera, it's more of a safety issue for all of our families and children, and it has nothing to do with private business and requiring them to make changes or whatever. But it has to do with the locker rooms and the shower rooms and things of that nature.
So so you'll be a no vote if there is some sort of deal to repeal House Bill 2?
I'm not in favor of repealing House Bill 2 at this time.
I see. Okay. Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. What should a gay person or a transgender person think when both sides are sort of, it seems, almost talking past them and talking, you know, a lot of people are talking about economic issues?
Well, there's four laws on the books already as far as people using restrooms of not of the gender of their birth. With that being said, there's the Peeping Tom statute. There's also a trespassing statute. And also part of the North Carolina Building Code identifies that men and women, boys and girls, have separate and usable restrooms. And I think there's a misconception, and it sounds like you might be on the borderline or fence with that, calling it the bathroom with that. It's not. It has to do with the shower facilities and locker rooms. A transgender person is born with a particular sex identified on their birth certificate. And all that the bathroom bill said, and that's short term or HB2, what people saying, is they use the bathroom according to their sex on their birth certificate. But it goes further than that. It uses the restroom and locker shower room facility of their birth certificate of saying what sex they are. So again, that saying safety part is, do you want to see a high school student that's 16 years of age that wants to identify with the girls that day to use the girls' locker rooms? I don't think most parents would be in support of that.
And what sort of accommodations could be made for the person who isn't just trying to go peep at women, but is actually identifying them not on that particular day, but has decided that that's who they are?
Well, studies have shown to start with that it's less than 0.5% of the population to start with. So we're in search of a solution to a problem that does not exist.
Well, what about for those people that it does exist for?
Well, for the persons that do exist for, the thing about it is, if you hadn't brought the issue up, nobody would have known it to start with.
House Bill 2 also prevents protections for LGBT people, whether, you know, beyond transgender people.
Well, HB 2 does not mention the word transgender anywhere in the bill, and the bill is 5 pages long. And with that being said, a problem that's in search of a solution. But the thing about it is, it would not have been a problem if Charlotte hadn't brought it up, because it sacrificed the rights of the other 99.5% of the people in the state.
But House Bill 2 also created protected classes statewide that did not include gay and transgender people.
Well, there's going to be some probably further discussion with that at some point. I look for that to be coming back up.
So, do you think that? I mean, this is speculation, I guess, but
very
do you
much
think
of
that
speculation.
Do you think that that could be something that comes up?
Well, like you were talking about earlier, the thing that failed back negotiations that fell through back in December on the special sessions, I probably can foresee that people will bring that back up again.
I see. Okay. So I notice, in photos, you've got the pro-life tag on a lot of your photos.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that there is any need for more legislation regarding abortion? And do you think we're where we need to be?
Well, personally, as an individual and a believer in Jesus Christ, and I'll stand up for the belief with that I'm God created. I just didn't happen. With that being said, that if more people would be interested in the killing and the destruction of a human life by abortion as they are about the animal wildlife kingdom, I think our world would be a better place.
Do you mind talking about your faith a little bit, how you grew up? Obviously, it's something that's very important to you.
It is. I grew up in a Southern Baptist missionary church. It was founded by my great-grandfather back in the early 1900s. That goes back to the 1800s. They used to have prayer meeting in his home and another person's home. Sundays were always church and reverence for Sundays. You didn't, you dressed up, you went to church. I've always made an attempt to acknowledge Christ as being my Savior. With that being said, when I worked in Charlotte, we prayed before every meal. It's not mandatory, but people that I felt like that were my family, the firefighters, we were a family, and we were going to act like a family, and we were treated like a family. Now, it was a work environment, yes, but we spent more time at work than we did at home. And it was very important that they knew that I was there for them, whatever the problem was, and that carried away from work, too. Since I've retired, I'm active in my church, and yes, I'm pro-life. And like I said, we just didn't happen. We're put on this earth for a reason. We have God-given reason to exist and God-given talents, and every life is important.
And I assume when you were at the fire department and throughout your life, you've had relationships with people who probably didn't have that same belief. And how do you think that informed you and helped you prepare for dealing with a legislature whose members won't all agree with you in terms of politics and religion and things like that?
Well, we are blessed to be able to have a country that we can practice our religions we seek freely, as long as we don't take and infringe on that right of others. And like I said, it was a non-requirement, non-mandatory for the folks I work with. I can say the legislature, we have a good group and a large group of persons, and we have a weekly Bible study and weekly chapel service at the legislature. In fact, just before we went into session for the 11th to be able sworn in, we had a prayer and singing there, and we had probably, as a small room, we need a bigger room, probably had over 75 to 100 people in there. And that's great. I think we were formed as a God-fearing nation. I think we need to maintain that God-fearing attitude and turn to God for the solution to our problems rather than taking that out on one another.
And I know that your beliefs are really rooted in small government as well.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah. There's been all this talk about the legislature coming in and making changes to councils and things like that. Is that something that bothers you?
Well, local control is important because no one knows better than what their problems are than the smaller governments. I believe Ronald Reagan said it best when he said, government's not the solution, it's the problem. As the old saying goes, the most seven dreaded words by anyone here in North Carolina hearing is, I'm from Raleigh and I'm here to help you. With that being said is, if you want a solution to a problem, sometimes it's not the ones at the top come up with the best ideas and solutions. It's those people that's actually doing the job that come up with the best ideas for cost savings, et cetera.
Yeah, we were surprised here in Asheville when we were following the city council debate over whether or not to split the city of Asheville into districts. And that was a proposal by Tom Apodaca. And we were surprised to see such bipartisan opposition to that, especially on the last day of session. And it did seem like there was this idea that permeated in the Republican Party of this is an issue for this group of people, and why does the legislature need to be involved? Is that something that, you know, you as an observer noticed, or do you think I'm getting that wrong as in terms of why that failed?
Well, the way we're set up constitutionally is the legislature has to approve any local bills, and that would be a local bill that would come to the House, and it would be a bill that would look at making those districts in Asheville just the same as it would be in Swain County. There's majority of the counties in the state have districts. Jackson mm-hmm. County does. You have to live in your particular district to be able to be elected from that district. There's something to be said for that. There's pluses and there's negatives. Mm-hmm. I think it should be up to the locals to make that decision. If nothing else, put it on a local ballot and let them vote on it mm-hmm. rather than the state legislature telling them what to do.
Yeah, that was it was a very interesting debate that occurred, I thought. It was one where the Democrats from Buncombe County were seeing that they had support from legislators like Josh Dobson and Michael Speciale, who they would probably usually vote a different way from each other.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mr. Dobson is my seatmate currently. He's in 114. I'm in 113.
Yeah. Do you have a good relationship with Josh Dobson?
Yes, I knew him when I was down there before. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. What are some of the other close relationships that you have?
Like I said, having worked down there before, I was very familiar with all the ones elected at that time that have returned. We have a good freshman class. We have about 18. And with the 18 in there, I can say that your interviewee that you had this morning, Cody Henson, mm-hmm. is a good man. By the way, he's the youngest one we have in legislature.
Yes,
he replaced Justin Burr.
He did seem like a very impressive guy.
Yeah, he has military experience. He's very level-headed, very sane person to deal with and whatnot.
So, seems very mature for his years, definitely.
Holly Grange is another lady. She's a former military. She's in fact, been appointed already to a committee, mm-hmm. which is a good thing. Gosh, Mr. Strickland, seatmate to the left of me, he's very, I find it very easy that we have the groups that we have, that we're able to communicate and talk to one another about issues and stuff locally for my area versus their area and take on. Andy Doolin, for example, is from Mecklenburg County. Our common thread is I retired in fire department, and I know where he lives out down in Mecklenburg County area. So we have a lot we discuss about the fire department and stuff like that. So the freshmen that I deal with, we have bonded and we have nucleused to where we've already been talking about stuff.
I see.
That being said, it's been very interesting to see how we've clustered with that.
And it seems like Chuck McGrady will be the senior most member from Western North Carolina at this time. Has he given you any advice as a freshman coming in?
Well, a lot of people give you advice.
Yeah, right.
Everybody gives you advice. But no, Mr. McGrady's a good man. I have known him before. We've talked when I worked down there. But now, very fortunate that I have a L.A. legislative assistant that used to work for him that's taken the job. I hired him. His name is Ed Stiles. So anyone that tries to get a hold of me in Raleigh will talk to Mr. McGrady's former legislative assistant.
I see.
He's very familiar with the process and what to do and who to contact and the daily routine.
I see. Okay. And you mentioned committee assignments. And over the phone, you had talked about you were hoping to get assigned to certain committees. Did that happen on the first day?
No, sir.
No. Okay.
Committee assignments have not been made yet. David Lewis is doing that. And as soon as we get back down on the 25th, I'm sure we'll hear what they are. But some of those I have picked to be on, I wanted to have committees assigned that I could take and relate to our problems back home. One of them was aging. Mm-hmm. We have an aging population in Western North Carolina, Swain, Jackson, Haywood. Also wildlife resources, children and families. We have a high teenage pregnancy rate problem. Mm-hmm. We need to address that. transportation appropriations and transportation, wildlife resources, veterans affairs, homeland security and safety. That's just some of the, we had a list of 10 that I turned in, so we'll see what assignments I do get. I tried, like I said, I tried to put together a list of things that I had done in real life.
Yeah. I had heard that there was going to be an effort to expand broadband out in rural counties. Do you know anything about those efforts?
Well, the efforts are definitely needed as far as that goes, because we have a very sparse availability of broadband. The broadband, as currently there is no proposals on the table. What I would like to see personally happen is some competition with that. Currently, we have single Tory providers in Western North Carolina, so that sort of encompasses you don't have any competition. So if we could get competition and other companies come in, I would probably speculate that the broadband service would get expanded at an affordable rate.
I see. How do you get companies to start competing? Is it that there's a law in place, and forgive my ignorance on it, is there a law in place that kind of prevents that? Is there some sort of monopoly going on?
Well, you're familiar with being a radio station, the FCC, I'm sure.
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
So you've got those some kind of rules and regs that fall across, and also fair trade agreements and things of that nature. So there are several hurdles that have to be overcome with that, and sometimes the hurdles are maybe exempting some requirements on the legalities of letting a company come in. And that's what we've done in the legislature before, and I'd like to continue, is reducing some of the government regulation so that we'll have more competition and have more free enterprise in North Carolina.
You were mentioning jobs, and of course the economy is a big issue. Tell me a little bit about your district and what sort of challenges are being faced by them.
Well, I have Swain County, which is my home county, and it's 90% federally owned, either the National Park, Fontana Lake, or a forest. Our population is only about 10,000, so we have a real challenge when it comes to local money and tax base to be able to fund the items that are necessary for the function of the government in Swain County. One of those things has to do with education. Currently, the low wealth formula that's used in Swain County for the public schools is they're one of the exceptions that get shortchanged on getting state dollars and federal dollars because the tax rate is, quote, so low. With that being the case, that's a good thing for the local folks because, one, they couldn't afford it. But on the other hand, we're missing out on the money for the, and trust me, I am not promoting high taxes, period. Mm-hmm. Okay, get that real clear. But because of the way the formulas are figured, they're getting shortchanged. And if you take Birdie County down east, they have a higher tax rate, millage rate, but their property value is low. We'll say that, you know, whatever it is, if it's a $100,000 home, they're paying $1.16 millage rate. Whereas in Swain County, you've got a $300,000 home and you're paying a 36 cents millage rate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a balancing act with that for Swain County. And that's just one issue with that. Briefly, and not getting to detail, is that North Shore Road money, the $52 million that's owed to Swain County by the federal government, that's in litigation.
Yeah.
So that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, and that's been going on forever.
Right, yes. Yeah. And then Jackson County. Jackson County is really done good. They just had an election, and they've got two new members on the board. Ron Mao and Mickey Luker, and they'll be moving further ahead and having job growth and economic development in Jackson County. I foresee that that's one of the places to be. As I reviewed some information at Institute of Government a week ago, they're saying by the year 2035, the population in Swain, Jackson, Haywood counties will increase by 50%. That's only 18 years away. So Jackson County has issues, I'm sure, and I'm sure those county commissioners will let me know what those are and what kind of help they need with that. Yeah. And then the same goes with Haywood County. Jackson and Haywood are so far ahead of Swain as far as size and growth. It's just because of the land area available. We just don't have it in Swain, mm-hmm. but they do. And Haywood County has been growing. I share that county with Michelle Presnell from the 118th District, and she and I have a good working relationship.
We're coming into a budget year, and you'll be a part of the majority party, so there's a good chance, I guess, you'll have a seat at the table when all these negotiations are happening. Is there anything that you're going to push for as far as getting help out to those counties out there?
Well, that'll be a case-by-case and county-by-county basis. I will tell you this is an odd year, numbered year. With an odd numbered year, the Senate starts out the budget process. It will not start in the House this time.
I see. Okay.
And so that sort of changes the thrust of stuff. The governor will submit a budget. Mm-hmm. When he submits the budget, it can either get rubber stamped or, as in most cases, gets put aside and everything gets to be reviewed and everybody gets to have their input. Mm-hmm. And the Senate will start that process and it'll come over to the House side.
Do you think that the legislature will and the governor will be able to find some common ground?
Well, like I have said earlier, all the people elected that's in Raleigh are there for the greater good of all the citizens of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It just depends on what direction they want to take with that.
What are some of the issues with aging that you want to address?
Well, we have an aging population, and an aging population, not all persons are having caregivers at their homes to take care of them, family members, et cetera. So we've got to look at facility-wise on that and having adequate care, functional care, and available care.
When I had Cody Henson in, I asked him about, you know, just the grind that the session can be, and about legislator pay. And it's a very sensitive issue, of course, for anyone to vote on their own pay increase. But that has been an issue. It does seem like that it does seem limiting that not a lot of people can go to Raleigh and serve. Is there any discussion on raising legislators' pay, and would that be something you'd be in favor of?
There's not been any discussion on that, and as far as saying a pay raise for myself, I didn't take it to go get a pay raise as such. But you are correct. It's very limited to individuals to participate, simply because if I say you have to be independently wealthy, that's why you have the doctors, the lawyers, the attorneys, and professional end people being down there, because it's expensive. It's 311 miles from my back door to the front door of the legislative building one way. It's a five-hour drive. With that being said, is an apartment is $1,000, $1,500 a month. You're down there in session from January through probably August of this year, yeah. And that's a one-year lease. And at $13,000 a year, there's not the money there to cover that. But I knew that going into this, and if I didn't have the retirement I had and have with the fire department, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing. So yeah. I'm going to say that if they discuss it, they discuss it, but it's not something I'm going to bring up.
Are you going to be making that drive every Thursday night, every Monday morning?
Every week, yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir. 622 miles, and I did that in 2013-14. In 6 months, I put 26,000 miles on my car.
I know that your family knew about that going in, but you guys have a strategy for dealing with just all the grind of it?
Well, fortunately, or unfortunately to some, whatever, I'm single, and it's just myself to care with. And my mom is in a nursing home. I do keep up and check with her as far as that goes. But as far as making the grind, it's a five-hour down here, 5 hour back, and I have a hope to have a place to be able to stay at that's going to be comfortable enough, like a motel room.
Yeah, and so you'll be able to see your mom still on the weekends and all that. And she's there in Bryson City as well.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, great. You know, I think those are my questions. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you think we should?
I just would like to, everybody to continue their prayers for the support for our legislature, our governor, and our nation.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the fact that you consider talking to the press part of your job as well.
Well, it is. I think that is part of being a legislator and a representative. We've got to make ourselves available when we can and discuss the issues and let people know where we stand and tell them if they want to comment or contact me, they can. I'll give my email address to my LA. It's Clampitt, C-L-A-M-P-I-T-T-L-A. @nclag.net. Okay. So if you feel inclined to send me an email, positive, negative, whatever, we'll be happy to take that. But another thing I plan to do is have town halls in all three counties, Swain, Jackson, and Haywood. My swearing-in ceremony that had been planned for January 7th was snowed out. So we're going to have a reception January 28th at the Swain County Regional Training Center in Bryson City, and it will be from 2 to 4 p.m.
Okay.
And it's an open invitation. Everyone's invited to come out to that.
Well, Representative Clampitt, I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your time and be blessed today.
All right.